Welcome to City Cover Eugene October 21st, 2016 program, the Eugene City Council 2016-2017 programming year. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, City Club Board President. The City Club of Eugene is a forum of ideas. We are a member-funded nonprofit that builds community vision through open inquiry. Today's program is supported by Oregon Country Fair. The Oregon Country Fair creates events and experiences that nourish the spirit and explore living artfully. Allow me to say a quick special note and would like to announce that the first ever annual event held this past weekend at the home of Janelle McCoy, the Oregon Bach Festival Executive Director, was a success. Thanks to all of you who attended this first ever annual event. We raised over $1,100, so thank you. We should continue this next year. And again, we want to thank Janelle and her husband, Derek Smith. Their generosity in opening their house and coordinating this event was outstanding. And we, City Club of Eugene, are grateful to them. And now to the Eugene City Council Ward 1 Candidate Forum. This program was coordinated by Randy Prince and assisted by one of our new members, City Club member Barry Summer. Barry, thank you so much, and we're in the back too. Today's moderator is Tom Adams from KVEL. Tom has been a news reporter since 1980s. He joined KVEL Newsroom in 2005, and he graciously once again has come up to support us in this type of forum. And with that, please help me welcome Tom to the podium.
Thank you, Juan Carlos. Thank you, City Club. Welcome to the program for today, and welcome to all the listeners on KLCC-FM for the program. Today's program features the race for Eugene City Council Ward Number 1, which covers the city center and areas to the south and the west. There is no incumbent in this council race in Ward 1. City Councilor George Brown is retiring after 2 4-year terms. George is here, I think. Are you here? George, thank you for your service. All right. Now, there were 5 candidates in the primary election last May. This fall, the runoff is the only contested race among the 4 councilor positions on the Eugene ballot. Serving as a city councilor, there are 8 people on the council total. It is regarded as a part-time job, generally requiring somewhat over 20 hours per week of service, and the councilors receive a stipend of $14,527 per year. Our 2 candidates will each make up to a 4-minute opening statement, and that will be followed by a break for table discussions amongst yourselves to come up with questions from club members. And then I'll be reading those questions submitted by City Club members. Both candidates during this first part will have 1 minute to respond to those questions. In the second half of the program, we'll hear questions from Christian Hill of the Register Guard to my immediate right, and also Rachel McDonald from KLCC-FM, also to my right. This segment will be a little bit more flexible, part 2. Questions may be directed to 1 candidate or both, and they may take up to a maximum 2 minutes per response, per candidate. We'll do our very best up here to give the same amount of speaking time to each candidate before going on to closing statements. I'll do my best to make sure different candidates have the first response to each question as much as we can up here. Follow-up questions will be allowed in part 2 by the journalists and your moderator and or the candidates. So part 2 should be fairly interesting. The candidates now. Joshua Scove co-founded Good Company, a consulting firm focused on sustainable business. He has served on boards and commissions advising the Eugene City, also Eugene Water and Electric Board, and Lane Transit District. Joshua holds a bachelor's degree from Yale and a graduate degrees from the University of Washington and the University of California at Berkeley. Emily Semple is a 31-year resident of the city of Eugene and the owner of a graphic arts business. She describes herself as a community activist, involved in a variety of non-governmental organizations. A mom, she has also served as a volunteer for School District 4J. Emily graduated from the University of Connecticut and also Lane Community College and studied forest ecology at Oregon State University at the graduate level. Let's welcome our two candidates for today's debate. Would you come to the front and center, please? Joshua Scove and Emily Semple. And good afternoon to both of you. We'll start with opening statements, a maximum of 4 minutes for both of you, and we'll go alphabetically. Emily, you can be first.
It's rather uncanny that I always go first. I think it's because I came in first in the primary. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about important city issues and why I'm running for Ward 1 Eugene City Council. Thank you for your time in listening and caring enough for our city to participate in local government discussion. And a grateful hello to our radio audience. I'd like to start off, if I can hold on to my papers, with my endorsements. I'm proud to be endorsed by elected progressives, Lane County Commissioner Pete Sorensen, incumbent Ward 1 Eugene City Councilor George Brown, and Ward 2 Betty Taylor. I'm also endorsed by Bonnie Bettman McCormack, Paul Nicholson, and David Kelly, former city councilors. In addition, I'm endorsed by Jim Weaver, former congressman, who told me that the most important job in government is city council. I'm endorsed by the Eugene Weekly. If you haven't seen my awesome picture on the cover, I invite you to pick up a copy outside. This is a really important endorsement. I think the Weekly resounds deeply with Ward 1. Lane County for Bernie Sanders, which is now our revolution, Lane County, has endorsed me. We endorse Emily in recognition of her activism and enthusiasm to stand up and fight for and with we the people for a better community, a welcoming city, and a clean, sustainable world. In addition, I've been endorsed by Lane County Pacific Green Party. Semple's community experience and positions on environmentalism, sustainability, homelessness, and neighborhood protection resonate with our members, who noted my opposition is supported by the Eugene Chamber of Commerce and development interests. I'm also supported, endorsed by AFSCME and thousands of community members. I'm running because I believe the council is unbalanced, and we need to keep our progressive voice on council. I may not be able to make direct changes because of the imbalance, but I believe it's incredibly important to keep our voices at the table and encourage races like we have here, where many competent people are vying to help our city. I want to provide a true progressive voice, ensure council's priorities are consistent with community priorities. Listening to people, all people, is one of my strongest skills. I will work for accountability in city government, and I will advocate for public housing. This is one of my strengths. I started 5 years ago advocating for the homeless, and that's what got me interested in city council. My work with the homeless has brought about changes, including rest stops, Opportunity Village, tiny housing, Conestoga wagons, and the veterans camp. I'm very proud of this and look forward to continuing my advocacy and working with Lucy Vinnis, who has her background in shelter care, a nonprofit. I think together we can make Eugene better. I will bring a new, fresh voice and my community experience, my ability to interact with all people. I look forward to your vote and serving you. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Emily. Joshua, opening statement.
Thank you. Thank you to everyone here today. Thank you to City Club for hosting this, and of course, thank you to the listening audience. Just a quick comment. I feel privileged to be in a race where both candidates share progressive values, deeply share the core values of South Eugene, and I specifically appreciate and honor the work on homelessness and advocacy that my opponent has done. It's not surprising, I think, that two people in a runoff in South Eugene would have these basic values in common. As I have joked to many people, there's never been a Ted Cruz or a Marco Rubio in this race. That said, this is still a clear choice with distinct candidates. I believe Ward 1 wants an independent, progressive voice and someone who will listen, who will fight for them, and who will deliver results, and I am that candidate. A bit of background. I have lived in Eugene for 16 years, for 15 years, in Ward 1. My wife, Kathy, and I have lived in several different places in Ward 1. We're raising our daughters here. They're in elementary school in the 4J system. I've been very involved as a community volunteer for over a decade. I encourage people to check out my website, joshuascove.com. We won't have time today to cover everything that's there, but I will refer to a few things. Please look for three things in particular that we'll probably only touch on in pieces. First, ideas. I've put more ideas and proposals out there in the public domain, talking to people at the door, talking to people at neighborhood associations and in various forums, than any local candidate I've seen in my time in Eugene. On housing and homelessness, on government accountability, on climate change, on transportation, on earthquake resilience, and more. Please look at these things. Ultimately, this should be a race, at least in part, about ideas and real progress. Second, my community service. I've been a community volunteer in many capacities on land use, transportation, climate and sustainability, currently on the budget committee, and more. That's where I've learned how our local government works or doesn't work, and it's where I've been involved as an activist and an advocate on many issues. And that leads me to, third, my endorsements. I encourage people to take a look at the breadth and depth, which I think speaks to the ability to bring together a coalition, not of people who always agree, but of people who want to see real change. The Sierra Club, Oregon League of Conservation Voters, Basic Rights Oregon, Mother PAC, four unions, the Democratic Party of Lane County, the Working Families Party of Oregon, and others have all endorsed my campaign exclusively, as well as a number of elected officials and scores of community leaders and volunteers. Again, please see more of those endorsements at the website. So I believe I have demonstrated that I have been a clear, independent voice for the community in round after round of successful advocacy on progressive issues, on budget transparency, on transportation safety, on climate change leadership in particular, and more. I've shown that I deliver results, and I will continue to deliver results, and I look forward to the opportunity to do so as a counselor. Thank you.
Thank you, candidates, for the opening statements. Juan, did you want to, Juan Carlos, announcement?
Okay, so here's how this portion is going to work. So we're going to be taking a break for about 5 minutes. I'd like to ask members to write your questions. They're going to be better right here in this table, and then Tom will, in fact, ask and ultimately ask those questions. So you have about 5 minutes to work on those questions, and we'll be back. Thank you.
This is KLCC Eugene 89.7, KLCO Newport 90.5, 89.1 KLFR Reedsport, and at 88.1 KLFO Florence, KMPQ Roseburg, KLBR Bend. KLCC is a service of Lane Community College. We're on Facebook and Twitter and online at klcc.org.
Okay. Welcome back to the October 21st City Club program, the Eugene City Council Ward 1 Candidate Forum. Support to City Club comes from Gators, Churnside, and Bothrop Attorneys at Law, a local firm with extensive expertise in general civil practice, and KLCC 89.7 FM, NPR for Oregonians. Thank you to KLCC FM for airing our programs on Monday evenings at 6:30. And, of course, thank you to community televisions for airing the programs Monday to Friday at 10:30 and Saturday as well, 10:30. Excuse me. So Monday to Friday at noon and Saturday at 10:30. Sunday's also at 9 a.m. Now, let's get back on this exciting portion of our program, and Tom Allen will take the floor once again in the rest of the program. Tom?
All right, so here we go with part one of our Q&A involving questions from all of you with S-City Club members, and candidates will have 1 minute each on responses, and James is keeping track of the time for me over here. Thank you, James. All right, so the first question from club members, and Joshua has the first crack at it. How do you propose to deal with the problem of travelers on downtown street corners in Eugene?
Great. Thank you for the question. It's become a really important issue, and I've heard a lot from people at the door about this. Going door-to-door for the campaign, I've heard a really interesting two-part message from people over and over again. First, we must do everything we can to help people who are in need, to help people with addiction, suffering from mental illness. We simply must do everything we can to help those people. And that part of that is in my housing and homelessness plan, especially with a housing first approach. But the second part of the message has always been, we also must make downtown a place that's welcoming to everybody. And I think with a foundation of first helping people who are in need, we must then also treat genuine public safety issues as public safety issues, only after truly helping people first. But I think that's what I have heard from the community over and over.
Okay. Emily, your response.
This is a really complicated problem, and it's nationwide, if not worldwide. There's so many reasons for homelessness, mental illness, catastrophe, drug addiction, coming out of prison. I believe we need more social programs to help people deal with this, and we need better education so that people coming out of school can get jobs and houses. Most of the travelers appear to be here by choice. I prefer to call them visitors. I believe we need shelter first. The reason people are sleeping on the sidewalk and making things uncomfortable for everyone is because they have nowhere else to go. We need to increase our shelter programs. I cannot stand these time things. They always get me off track. We need to respect human life and reach out wherever we can. I will continue my advocacy for all homeless. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question from club members. Where and what should we do about Kesey Square? Emily first.
This is my question. I love Kesey Square. Kankesey is one of the reasons I moved here. Kankesey Square, it should be called Kesey Square, we're advocating for that, needs to stay in the public domain. Right now, it is the only place in Eugene where we can practice our freedom to peaceful assembly and free speech between the hours of 11 and 6. This is critical. We also need to have open spaces for people to gather. It's a small place. It's not appropriate for a tall building. There's just not enough room there. But a green place with trees. Let's get some benches and tables, please, and some restrooms. This will make it more comfortable and appealing. Right now, it's a brick box. Nobody wants to go there. So people sit with Kesey. Let's keep it. Thank you.
Thanks for the question. I did think we dealt with this in the primary, but it's exciting to hear it again. I, like my opponent, have supported keeping this as public space. I think part of what you saw in the spring when this was a really hot issue was that people have a general sense of the loss of public space, the loss of publicly owned assets, and the taking over of those things by corporate interests and private interests. And I think especially for something so culturally important, of course, we should hold on to it as public space. So we agree on that. But we also have to be committed to making it work, and it doesn't work for everybody. And I'd like to connect this to my previous answer. You know, if we're going to have something that's public space, it should be genuine public space. It should be accessible to all. And what we've seen is often it has been essentially privatized by groups of people who are not always hospitable to everybody. When I try to go down to the center of downtown with our two young daughters, it's not always a place that I want to bring them. And that's why I think we need to be fully committed to making it open and accessible to everybody.
All right, next question from the club, and I may add a little bit to this one. Please address how you will take action to reduce climate change in Eugene. I might maybe do a PS to this. So what other city programs to foster the use of green energy, perhaps? Joshua first.
Great, thank you. I think many people here know that I've spent the last 15 years dedicated professionally to climate change and sustainability issues, so I'm excited to answer this in 60 seconds. first of all, from the standpoint of what you do on City Council, it must be that you always ask the climate question. That means in all major decision-making, this should be one of the things that's front of mind. And I have spent my career essentially working with people in government and business to help ask these questions in all of their major decisions. There's a great piece in the Eugene Weekly, actually in the same issue that has a fantastic picture of Emily on the cover, by Matt McRae, our former climate and energy analyst, and he lays out the big areas where we can make a difference, where we actually have local policy and investment levers. Land use, transportation, the management of waste locally. We have a fair amount of control or at least influence on these systems. Specifically, I've been an advocate on transit and bicycle and pedestrian issues, and actually transportation safety in particular is important on this, and I hope we have a chance to turn back to it later.
Okay. Emily, your response?
With the issue of sustainability, I find that my educational background helps me. I understand these issues. I do have ideas. We've got too much carbon. We've got to reduce our carbon emissions. One of the biggest carbon emitters is cars. Get people out of their cars. It's also the most dangerous thing on the street. I, too, am in favor of improved bike paths, sidewalks, walking opportunities, both for the help and communication of our neighbors and city, but also to get people out of their cars. I advocate for free buses. This is done in Corvallis. Ridership has gone up 37%. To get people out of their cars, they need to have better alternatives. There's other carbon emitters that we really need to either get rid of or find out how to deal with. International Paper in Springfield, the Seneca Biomass Digester are the two top carbon emitters. Let's get the carbon out of our air.
All right, next question. Is there a way to have the City Council more involved in the policy and decisions directly instead of rubber stamping the city manager? Emily is first.
I think that we could have a more responsive and accountable city manager. I really think it's a problem. The communication is not happening. The accountability is not there. The council is so weak because their desires are often not listened to. I think we need to improve communication between the community and the council. I think that there is a possibility we need to look at charter reform so we really do have a strong council. I also think if we can find a way for it not to be directly paid for by the city, so it's a conflict of interest, is a public auditor, so we really know what's going on in the city. Thank you.
Go ahead, Joshua.
So I've really wrestled with this because of my role on advisory bodies, and I have fought hard to get real oversight, but it's an ongoing challenge, and it has convinced me that we need some systemic reforms. Of course, there are details at joshuascove.com/accountability, no joke. But I want to pick out two particular things. And one comes out of a review of the charter that citizens did at the behest of City Council back in 2002, and that was to have a performance auditor. The state of Oregon has a performance auditor. Lane County has a performance auditor. The federal government has a general accountability office. This is a tried and true model. We need to have this something that it's essentially a position that reports, like our police auditor, directly to council, not through the city manager. And I think this would be key for accountability. The other thing is we need public and meaningful reviews of the city manager. I think many of you probably share my frustration that those reviews now happen behind closed doors. And it isn't just about whether the current city manager is right or whether he's doing a good job or not. It's about whether we can see it and he's being held accountable for particular outcomes.
Okay. Next, what three issues, or maybe two issues, what two or three issues distinguish yourselves from your opponent the most? Joshua? Contrasting issues.
Sure. Tough, huh? Because we've already sounded like we've agreed on a fair amount. I'm going to count this one as an issue, and that is my dedication to the details. I think it's nice how in 2016 it's become socially acceptable to proudly be a nerd about certain things. But actually, caring about the details of how local government works is ultimately about caring about people's lives. It is, as you've heard from both of us, about public spaces, it's about sidewalks, it's also about how we spend money as a city. It's about people's lives, and it's about basic livability. And I think what I have shown in more than a dozen years of community service is that I will get in there and do the hard work. I will do my homework. I will be there to deliberate. I will be there to hold staff accountable to our higher goals. And that dedication to the details doesn't fit easily in quick answers every 4 years, but ultimately it's about the job of a city councilor, I think.
I guarantee you that I pay attention to details. I also can multitask better than most. I'm a good listener. I think my biggest strength is that I really can relate to all people and bring their desires, concerns, solutions to the public. I think that we disagree on certain issues. For instance, MUPTI, it's been ruined for any acceptability. I have been against the South Willamette Special Area Zone from the beginning. I am in support of the refinement plan to be led by the residents of the neighborhoods. I know there's some more issues. I am really an advocate for the homeless, and I have made changes, rest stops, Opportunity Village. These come from my work. Thank you.
Next question from the club, kind of a process question on local democracy. It takes five council votes, or four, plus the mayor, to pass anything at the council. How will you get a majority to support your ideas? Emily, first.
I think this is going to be a really big challenge. The council is so lopsided. Four councilors have endorsed my opponent. With my opponent and those four, we have a majority. I will have a hard time working with those four who, from the get-go, oppose me. I hate it when my mind goes, oh, my gosh. It's a challenge. So my idea is to keep those voices, keep those progressive issues on the table, and try work to get more people on the council so it's not so lopsided and we can have real discussions on how to make our city better for everyone so we can thrive and continue to be Eugene. People live here because they like Eugene. Let's keep Eugene, Eugene. Thank you.
So that's actually a helpful starting point. I have been endorsed by four of the current city councilors, and so one of my answers would be I will work with those people with whom I have working relationships. Not 100% agreement on all issues, but working relationships. So that is definitely the starting point for getting a majority. The second point, though, I think is more subtle and is out of the public eye most of the time, and that is also to maintain strong working relationships with staff. This doesn't mean becoming friends with staff. It doesn't mean just taking their word for things, but it means having good working relationships. And I feel my opponent is endorsed by some current or former city councilors who have often not quite understood how to have good working relationships with staff, and that staff, in fact, are the most important tools in the toolbox of a city councilor. I've heard over and over from people at the door when I say, what do you want to see different out of the city or city council? A lot of people say, just get something done. And I agree with that, and I think I can do that. I think I'll bring the right problem solving and the right collaborative spirit.
Next question related to local planning. Do you favor inclusionary zoning? I think this might have something to do with our South Willamette controversy. Am I correct on that? On the right track there? Joshua?
Sure. Well, let me start actually with South Willamette. Actually, just to clear up the record a little bit, I actually was never approved or endorsed the South Willamette Special Area Zone, so I'm not really sure that that's a difference between me and my opponent. I also have been openly in favor for many months for a refinement plan or similar resident-led process that's supported by staff. But to inclusionary zoning, so inclusionary zoning, for those who don't know, is a way to require developers to include housing that meets certain income level needs, essentially lower income housing as part of bigger developments. This was enabled by state law back in spring, and in fact it's part of my housing affordability strategy that you can find at my website, you know, joshuascove.com/housing. But in fact, looking at inclusionary zoning and also a construction excise tax, both of which showed up in that state law, could be really important. I think we have to look closely at what other communities has done. It sounds like a great idea, but the devil's in the details. You can do inclusionary zoning in a way that prevents development, and you can do it in ways that actually boost housing supply.
I'm really grateful that we now have the opportunity to use inclusionary zoning, and I encourage the city to adopt it. One of the things that I care about is that we keep mixed neighborhoods. The people who sweep the floors should get to live next to where the floors are. I don't want to see gentrification. This is a wonderful opportunity to have mixed populations around all the areas of education, health care. It's really, really a good idea. In addition, we need to look for other sources of funding. We need to get more matching grants from HUD. There's many things we can do to increase the diversity of housing. And increasing the diversity of housing is critical for everyone to be housed, from the homeless to the high tech. I encourage us to adopt inclusionary zoning. It will help.
And last question for segment one. This kind of a statewide scope on this question. Your personal stance on ballot measure 97. Emily, first.
When I first heard about measure 97, I was thrilled. Our education system is a disaster. When my children were born, I was thrilled. 4J was at the top. As they went through the school, it deteriorated. I'm lucky they got out in time. So I will take the risk and vote for 97 because I want more money for education. I do have some concerns. The fact that it's on the gross can be really detrimental for people who have huge costs for their inventory. Their profit does not match their cost. And I can see why it might not be on the net, because certain people, like one of the candidates for president, are really good at tax manipulation. So if it's on the net, we might not get much money. The other thing I'm concerned about is it actually goes to the general fund, and so it may not go to education.
Yeah, I have also publicly endorsed Measure 97. I think everybody wants, certainly people in Ward 1 are very supportive of more money for schools and for health care and for senior services, for which the revenues from 97 have been dedicated. Let me speak to those who are on the fence about 97. And my opponent alluded to this. I acknowledge some of the concerns on the surface. A gross receipts tax is not something that you would ever implement if you were building fiscal policy from scratch. It's clunky. It treats all industries the same. We know revenues and profits look very different in different industries, so it's tough. But actually, I think it's fundamental that we pass Measure 97 for a couple of reasons. First of all, it's not going to have the effect on prices that most people predict, and that's why so many economists have actually spoken out in favor of Measure 97. I encourage you to look for that. And the second thing is we need to be in a different bargaining position with business interests in this state in order to get reasonable revenues to fund schools and other services. And we'll only get that, I think, if we pass Measure 97.
All right, journalists, are we ready? Moving into part two of our Q&A of our program today, our journalists on the panel, Christian and Rachel, directing questions to one or both candidates, and you have up to 2 minutes on your responses, yay, per candidate. And follow-up questions will be allowed in some form. We'll handle that as equitably as we can. Okay.
This is Rachel. Hi, I'm surprised and happy that no one asked yet about City Hall. I know that's a big issue, especially just the most recent recent City Council meeting. The idea of putting the City Hall in the EWEB building was once again brought up. A new City Hall hasn't yet been built. So what are your opinions on what should happen with City Hall and how to work with the cost overruns that we're looking at?
Joshua first.
Yeah, I was a little surprised, too, that we didn't get to that, but knew we would. Well, first of all, I mean, my starting point is good use of public resources sitting on the budget committee. I see this close up, knowing what sort of PERS shadow is looming for the city's budget. I am very concerned about this. I do want to say I want to push back a little bit on the idea of cost overruns. I think the problem is that we haven't been clear on what it is we want and what it is we're going to get, and so really, we have had a really poor public discourse because so much was hidden from view for so long. And I think that's really the thing that went wrong here. We needed to be pushing the city manager and staff to be more transparent more often. And so that's on the city manager and staff, but it's also on city council, I think, for not getting this out in the open a lot sooner. And, you know, going a year or two with almost no news on it was a huge, huge problem. It's difficult to take a position on this at the moment because there's no clear menu. We have a few different things. We could rebid the current site. We could use the EWEB building. We could collaborate with the county somehow. I appreciate the reporting of the Register Guard on different options involving the county and the farmers market. I think we need to look at all of those. But I think this has to come back to what we actually want and need as a community and how it relates to public buildings as a whole, right? It has to be about what that part of downtown is going to look like and what we need to get out of a city hall. Many people wonder why we would invest in a city hall, and I think we need to make that case really, really clearly. I think we've had some glib versions of that are not helpful, saying, oh, in an earthquake, you can just meet at the fire station, things like that. Well, no, actually, a city hall can serve really important purposes, but we're in a digital age. We have big differences in the way we're delivering services, but we also don't want to pay rent in existing commercial buildings forever. So I want to make sure that this is something that comes before the community with a clear menu of options. We know what we're paying for, but it's not just about a price tag. It has to be about what we're going to get.
Emily?
I absolutely agree that the process of designing and approving the city hall has not gone smoothly. Regardless of what happened, we need to go forward. I would like to see all of the city offices as much as possible be right next to each other. So when you find you went to the wrong department, the right department isn't very far away. For this reason, I'm really intrigued by EWEB. I do think the city is going to grow towards the river. I would like to see the city own the riverbank so it's available for everyone instead of going to private interests. One problem with the EWEB building is there's a railroad track. So that might add to the cost so that people get to cross the railroad track under or over it. My second choice would be putting City Hall at the back of the Butterfly lot. I realize that it's owned by the county and it may not be possible to make the land switch, but I think if we're going to have a smaller City Hall, it's appropriate to put it on a smaller lot. This would enable us to have a farmer's market in front, which is where the market would like to stay, and also would give us more space in front of City Hall where we could have other gatherings and sort of a faux commons. This would involve a phase two. I would like to see us use the circuit court building. I also would like us to sell the City Hall lot to the county so they can have a really good, functional, attractive court. As well as City Hall, this is also important. I really don't like those cards. So we need a lot more work. We need to be careful with the design. We can't worry too much about the money that's already gone. We need to move forward, and we need to check out what everybody wants, not just me.
All right. Christian, your turn.
Thank you. What is the most pressing issue in your ward, and if elected, what specific policy or proposal would you propose to address it?
Emily's first.
Well, we've already talked about this somewhat. I ask every person I canvass which issue is of most concern to them. 80 to 85% of them answer homeless. I have noticed that the attitude has changed from fear to worry. In the 5 years I've been advocating for the homeless, City Council went from no support to small support to more support. We need to really increase that. We need more rest stops. We need to promote Housing First, the Kitty is in favor of, and I really would like to see a shelter. It's outrageous to me how many millions of dollars we think we have to spend on a wide variety of projects when we have no shelter. $500,000 was proposed by the city manager for something special for the games. I suggest a shelter. That money would be enough to start a design, look for a site, and do some major fundraising. A shelter would revitalize downtown. What a wonderful thing to say to our visitors that we have heart and we care for all of us, especially the most vulnerable. This is a critical issue. The city can find money for what it wants. The people want shelter. I also think we've got that large, full block, graveled lot. It's fenced. It has water. It has electricity. There's no houses next to it, and the sheriff is across the street. Let's take that empty City Hall lot that we're not going to build on for quite a while, use a corner of it, start a rest stop, see how it goes. I believe St. Finney has surplus army tents that you can put smaller tents inside for privacy and livability.
Lots of pressing issues. I think I've touched on climate already. We had an earlier question, but I want to talk about housing. I don't think the frame should just be homelessness, but it should be broader. We have several thousand unhoused people in Lane County. I completely agree with my opponent and so many people in South Eugene. We must do what we can to serve that population. But we have as many as 20,000 households in Eugene that are housing cost burdened or severely underhoused, people who are couch surfing, people who are paying 40 or 50 or 60% of their incomes on housing. This is not just here, of course. We're really part of a broader housing crisis on the West Coast in general and even nationally in big metropolitan areas. But we are starting to look more like Seattle and Portland and San Francisco than people realize. That's why the main policy piece that I put forward from the beginning of the campaign was a housing affordability strategy. And I think the city needs to think that way. We need to be working on housing affordability much more broadly. To these two other ideas about a public homeless shelter and the City Hall site, of course, our instinct would immediately be for a public homeless shelter. I've suggested already to budget staff to put that into the next multi-year financial plan. But I think we have to be really clear about this. This is a good example of the distinction, I think, between me and my opponent. Obviously, we like the idea on its face, but it's important to say that's not something you just build. It's something that you have to run. And it's also something that if it's not like a Housing First facility, as I have suggested in my strategy, it actually is more of a Band-Aid. Now we need emergency shelter. I support the micro-housing work that we've done. I support the Conestoga huts, car camping, dusk to dawn ordinance, all of those things. But a public homeless shelter is a tricky thing to pull off for a city that actually doesn't have social services as part of its portfolio. So that's something we have to look at really closely, and I think if we're even going to talk about it, it has to be about partnerships.
Question now about, it was a very hot issue some years back, MUPTE. Tax breaks to developers. City Council decided to put that program on the shelf to do some reworking and do some reforms. Now it's back on the table again. In your view, did the reforms go far enough or not go far enough for MUPTE? Joshua?
So this is a really important issue, and again, I think this shows the distance between me and my opponent. When you ask people in South Eugene, do you want to give tax breaks to developers? What do you think the answer is? It's no from just about everybody. And in fact, that's why we reformed our MUPTE ordinance in 2015. Most people don't talk about that. We've only had one project now, very recently, approved under that new ordinance. But the point was not to just say no to this idea, but to say, let's try to do it with oversight. Let's try to do it by paying attention to the details. The poster child for what went wrong with MUPTE was, of course, Capstone. What went wrong? It was a low-quality building. We now have criteria for energy efficiency and building quality. What else went wrong? They said they were going to build A. They ended up building B. You know, after they got their tax break. Now we have a review process there. There was nothing that involved the neighbors. Now we have a neighborhood committee that reviews the process. We have basically gone and carefully fixed the things that were wrong. And so I think this fundamentally comes down to whether you just want to say no to things in a politically expedient way, which my opponent and her supporters have done aggressively on MUPTE, or if you want to say, hold on, how do we provide oversight? And ultimately, I think what MUPTE is about, like so many issues, is saying, what are we going to give up and what are we going to get back? And Capstone, of course, scarred people. It's a building that is not just low quality but fails to invest in the public realm. It has those ridiculous plastic sidewalks next to it, and a building that comes up right to the edge of the street, allowing for nothing else and no street front retail. But those are things that we can change, and ultimately what we have to do is say, what are we going to give in terms of a tax break, and what are we going to get back in terms of investment? And I think there will be deals that we can do that are good for the city.
It is true that I have been against MUPTE from the beginning. I do not change my platform. If I do, I will tell you, and I will tell you why. MUPTE has not worked. A MUPTE by another name is still a MUPTE. It is not providing affordable housing downtown. It's provided more student housing for rich students. The latest MUPTE, I don't like it. I think we need to just get rid of MUPTE, because when you tell people MUPTE, it ruins the project. They don't want it. We need other strategies. If you ask, would you like 10 years of property taxes? I haven't heard anybody say no. What could you do with that? Maybe you want to give some of it towards that shelter. It hasn't worked. That money needs to be in the general fund. We had to vote on a levy to keep the library going, get better, because that money was not in the general fund. The people who are benefiting are the developers. The rents are high, $900 for a studio in the new MUPTE building. That's not affordable. It's not helping. We need to find other ways. There are other ways. And we need to stop MUPTE. I believe this, and I will work for it. Thank you.
Joshua, brief response.
Yeah, brief response. So just to be clear, actually, you can't build student housing under the current revised MUPTE. So it's an important point there. And we did that because we didn't just want to subsidize more student housing. But that's not what's at issue. Important to point out. I think I need to be clear about this. Like, what do I mean by public benefit? Why would we even have this conversation? This isn't about yes MUPTE or no MUPTE. It's about, like, are we going to be nuanced with it or not? And we have a lot of goals that our community holds dear that are served by having housing downtown. We have failed to have new housing that's not student housing or just renovations downtown, almost none in 16 or 17 years. Think about that. But doing housing downtown meets our transportation goals, it meets our climate goals, it meets our downtown revitalization aspirations. So yeah, I want to have a serious conversation about what would actually deserve a MUPTI, but it's not a blanket statement. And the question should never be posed to people as just, do you want to throw away money to developers or not? Okay. That's not a good enough question.
Okay. Time for one more question, briefly, Rachel.
Well, my question is about transportation, especially with MX construction going underway. Traffic is getting to be more of an issue in parts of Eugene. What would you see to improve safety and ease of movement for vehicle, bicycle, and pedestrian traffic, especially with a growing population?
Emily's first.
I think we already talked a lot about transportation. Definitely, I want more walking and biking. I do not want so many cars. That will get people into buses. I think that we need free high-speed buses between the nodes that we're developing according to Envision Eugene. I also think we need to invest in those nodes and not just in downtown. Free buses would help our climate. It would help keep people where the jobs are. And if we had buses between the nodes, if there was a high school play at a different high school, you could get on the bus and be there. I'd like to see smaller networks branching off of the main bus stops with better schedules, better routes, so people don't have to walk a half a mile to take a bus that comes every half an hour. I want to support better transportation. It's healthier for people to be walking and biking. We can slow down a little bit and still get where we're going. And I want to help us get to a better place. Thank you.
Okay, Joshua.
So I've been one of the prominent local advocates on what's called Vision Zero, which is now really an international movement for safety in transportation systems. The name comes from reducing the deaths and major injuries in transportation to zero. And I'll just tell you a quick personal story about how I got truly engaged on this. Although I've been walking and biking and taking the bus in addition to driving for many years here, when the three children were killed in Springfield in early 2015 last year, I think many people remember this, they were struck and killed by a truck in a crosswalk. They were 8, 5, and 4. And my daughters were 8 and 5 at the time. And this really moved me because I'm out on the streets with them often. And I know how vulnerable they are, but this really woke me up and said, hey, this needs to be the priority. Our transportation system can't just be about traffic and speed. It has to be about human life, and we need to say that. So Vision Zero is about that. It's about human life. And from there, it's about weaving this into everything that we do. And that means meeting with engineers. It means talking about street design. It means prioritizing safety and human life at every turn. And I'm very proud to say I was part of a broad effort here to get both Lane Transit District and the City of Eugene to adopt Vision Zero as a goal for the community, for their respective pieces of the transportation system. But that means that's a starting point, and from there we need to keep advocating for those changes. And those changes ultimately are not, necessarily great, big, obvious changes. They're about the details. They're about street design. They're about providing sidewalks. They're about all of those little pieces that will decide how we can get from A to B safely.
All right, we're almost at the end of our time here. Did you want a brief response?
Yes, I would.
Quick.
There are ways that we can improve safety. Not all of them cost money. We can lower the speed limit. Okay, we have to buy some new signs. How about some more crossing guards? I like that idea. We do have to find money for another police or more to monitor our traffic and more speed bumps. Another idea I've seen used is you put an empty police car and people slow down.
Time for closing statements, and because we're bumping up against a deadline, only a minute and a half for closing statements each. Joshua first.
I want to thank everyone again for being here. I want to thank all of the people who've supported my campaign, all the volunteers that have worked on the campaign. But I want to say also what I think it's really about for me. I've been to the doors of over 3,500 people in Ward 1. And I've heard a ton about a ton of different issues. You may know people in Eugene have some opinions. But the other thing that I've heard is a loss of trust in government, and not in the idea of government, not in the idea that government can work, but a feeling of distance between them and their local municipal government. And that's really what I'd like to change. The reason you hear so much from me about solutions and details is that I think we need to rebuild people's trust by talking to them about these concrete solutions and getting some of them done and having them see those successes. Ultimately, I believe that's what it means to be a progressive. It means getting out there and making the changes that people want and really listening to them and working with them to get it done. So, Ward 1, I ask for your vote.
I'm running for city council because I believe in government by the people, for the people, and I don't think that's happening. We have to keep our voice at the council. I think we need better communication. The website is not good. I also would like to see other ways for people to know about meetings besides the small calendar in the Register Guard. I would like to see meetings posted at the bus stops, at community centers, at the library. I'm also very much in favor of supporting and encouraging neighborhood associations. Communication is the basis of community. If we get people talking to each other, we will have brainstorming and solutions. I encourage neighborhoods and residents to bring their concerns to council. As they see council listening, which I will do, they will be encouraged to continue participating in government. I am the best candidate. I do listen. I will help. I'm smart. I learn fast. And I care about Eugene. Please support me with your vote, and I will support you with my work. The choice is simple.
Let's say thank you to our candidates today at the forum. Juan Carlos now.
So let me say thank you to Emily Semple, Joshua Scov, Christian Hill of the Register Guard, Rachel McDonald of KLCC, and of course our moderator, Tom Adams from KVAL News. This season of forums for CityCup, we've been very, very fortunate to have a lot of support from KLCC and others, especially KVAL today for the moderators. So it takes a lot of community to make these things happen. It takes a lot of effort to make sure that we, in fact, bring you this type of forums in a way that is neutral. I have ensured that our timekeeper, for example, is not connected to any campaign, is not an elected official of any kind. The people that are vetting the questions, I have ensured that they're not with the campaign either, they're not elected. All of those things that you see, you may not notice, that's important for our democracy to bring that kind of neutrality to our club. So I want to also say thank you to our sponsors, the Oregon Country Fair, Gators, Churnside and Barthrop, Attorneys at Law, and KLCC 89.7 FM. Our program next week is the Oregon Death with Dignity Law, the theory and the practice. If you are passionate about democracy and want to help choose community issues discussed at our City Club meetings, please consider joining the program committee. You can find the application on our website, and if you are a City Club member, you can be a part of that. Additional information about other committees and the work we do, you can find it at www.cityclubofeugene.org. My name is Juan Carlos Valle, and this concludes today's program. Thank you.